Nadia talking about a highly available ad blocking private DNS setup in Kubernetes. But I've been told you do not need to know Kubernetes to have fun in this talk.
Exactly.
All right, good luck.
Thank you very much. Okay, hello everybody. Welcome to this talk. Is this on? Is this okay? Okay. Better now? Good. Still okay now? I don't want to look down if I can. Good. So welcome again to this talk. As I have made Peter said, that this is like a very, very long title, explicitly engineered to catch your attention. Like, if I were to talk about this with friends, I would rather call this like a cool over-engineered DNS setup. So I think that's like a more faithful representation of reality. Cool. So as again, my name is Nadia. You have my contact info in my website in the footer in there. So let's get into the agenda. So we have a lot of things to talk today. I have not rehearsed this. I have no idea if I will have time for demos. I will do my best. But in a nutshell, first of all, you may have noticed that there is some sort of elephant in this room after you have seen the title, so we will address that. Then I will present you my wish list for a DNS setup. We will talk about that. Then I will briefly talk about Kubernetes a bit. Again, no prior experience needed, but I will comment why Kubernetes and how does Kubernetes help with this. And then we'll get into the DNS gore details. We'll talk about how we do DHCP with DNS mask. DHCP and there is a connection here between DHCP and DNS, trust me. And then we'll talk about more DNS stuff, like what's my upstream server, which is DNS script proxy, about the stateless DNS, which does cool stuff with DNS and Kubernetes, and then more how we are going to tie everything together with DNS mask. Okay, so first of all, the elephant in this room. Is this talk about Pi-hole? No, it is not. Why didn't you use Pi-hole? Will be like the second elephant in this room. Well, because I didn't want to. I mean, Pi-hole is great software. If you are happy with Pi-hole, that's amazing. Pi-hole is amazing. If you have a use case that Pi-hole solves, then go ahead. That's great. I chose to go the hard way because I think it's more fun and because I think you learn stuff doing that. And you can also do some things that are harder to do with out-of-the-box solutions. So we won't talk about Pi-hole anymore. Whoops, not back, forward. Okay, wish list. So when I was like trying to come together with this DNS setup for my network, I was thinking what kind of stuff do I want to have in this network, right? So first one, and not sure if most important, but certainly a quite important requirement, is to block ads. Why? Because they are bad. They are exploitative. They are bad for you. They are bad for your mental health, and they are a malware vector. So let's get rid of those. Second thing, it has to be fast. Like time to resolve. That's what I meant by TTR here is like a huge factor in perceived speed. You open a web browser. You go to a URL. First thing you need to do: resolve a name. Maybe one if you are lucky. Maybe 10 if you are not so lucky. So the time it takes to resolve that is like, a major factor in how the speed of your network is perceived by users. Third thing, it has to be private. If you use you shouldn't use your ISP DNS, like the DNS that ship with your ISP router. These are like dubious at best. Hopefully they are fast, not guaranteed, but they are definitely not private, and some of them do nefarious stuff with domain names that do not exist. These are bad. Okay, so what if I point to 8888? Well, I mean, I wouldn't point to 8888 in particular, but doing this unencrypted is, I will say dubious. I don't feel comfortable aggressing unencrypted traffic through my network that can be trivially monitored by anyone. I don't know if my ISP is doing this. I hope it isn't, but I don't want to try it. Okay. More things. Be flexible. So that's kind of a given, but I want to be able to maybe unblock this name that is in a block list somewhere, but I do want to use it. I want to be able to integrate with DHCP because that's like quite nice. You can just ping a host name and that just works. And I wanted to integrate maybe with other name servers. We will see how that works. Like maybe I have a specific name server for a niche application. So the flexibility is like kind of important. And maybe the most important thing on this on my requirement list is to be reliable. If your home DNS is down, there is no internet. People will yell at you. People who live with you will yell at you. Hey, internet is down. Did you mess up with DNS again? I used to get these questions quite a lot, like once a month. Since I deployed this thing, zero. Not a single time, and I am very proud of this, not a single time any people living in my house have told me, did you mess up with DNS again? It just works, and I can update and restart and do stuff, and everything just works. That is amazing, and that is something that Kubernetes really helps with. Okay, infrared, let's go. Spoiler, don't look at this very much. We will look at it again, but you may see that there are, you know, Kubernetes pods, there are nodes, there's core DNS. We are not talking about core DNS, so you can ignore it. There's other devices, that is devices that are outside the Kubernetes network. There is DNS mask, lots of stuff. Don't look at this too much. We will go to that later. Okay, so let's get into the Kubernetes stuff. Why Kubernetes? So why would you run your DNS setup inside Kubernetes? Because Kubernetes is quite nice for a lot of stuff. And I have a list here. If I had to go in order, I would say that Kubernetes makes failover and high availability, that's what I mean by HI, for free, mostly. For free means in terms of cognitive load, not in terms of cash, right? So that means that you can upgrade your DNS server, which you should be doing, that you can make changes to your infrastructure, and nobody will yell at you for messing up with DNS. So that's kind of cool. And again, it works for both containers and nodes. So that means that you can take the DNS, the container serving DNS down, or the whole node serving, hosting the container that serves DNS down, and nobody should notice. The second thing that I really like is GitOps for free. If you are not in the cloud native Kubernetes scene, GitOps means that you put your stuff in Git and you have something that makes what is in Git a reality, right? So this means that the config files for your services, in this case for your DNS services, how they interconnect, how they relate to each other, that will be versioned as text in Git. That is amazing, that is priceless. Like, you make a mistake, oh, Git revert. I will think about the mistake later, but DNS will be up like very soon. That means that it is kind of self-documenting also. So if you forget and if you make a setup like over-engineer like this, you will forget. At least I have forgotten. Then you just go to the Git repo, you see the config files, they point to each other. It is so nice. Easy observability, that's what OLI, as is often pronounced, stands for. You can, like, Kubernetes is very friendly. You just drop an annotation here and export it in there, and you have metrics. And most importantly, it was already there. Like, to answer, every time I talk about doing something with Kubernetes, people ask me, should I set up Kubernetes for this? No, you should not. It is too much effort to set up a whole Kubernetes cluster for one thing. But if you have many things, like maybe too much for one, maybe too much for two, for three, still too much, you have 10 things, I would recommend you to start thinking about it. Because then you will start having everything in Git, everything managed the same way. So if it is already there, why not use it? Okay, how does Kubernetes help us in the technical gory detail? So there is this thing called MetalLB, which I really love. This is like an amazing project. It's like, what, I mean, 25% of what makes Kubernetes great for me is this thing. MetalLB is a layer 3 failover, and that's what is going to be unlocking our reliability here, and also highly availability. How does it work? MetalLB is some sort of ARP proxy. ARP is like DNS for IP addresses, if that makes sense. So what this does is that when the client asks our DNS server, which we configure to be in address 1015, okay, which computer, which MAC address is 1015? The nodes that have DNS pods will gossip between each other and some sort of agree on which is going to be 1015 for the next period of time. So one of them will say, hey, I am 1015 for sure. So then the client will say, okay, can you resolve this name for me? And the node with the pod that has a DNS server will say, hey, there you go. If this node goes away, if this pod goes away from the node, then MetalLB will notice, and the next time somebody asks for 10.15, it will be a different node answering. So that's how you get this failover and high availability, and this is how you upgrade the machine without breaking DNS for everybody, which is quite amazing. Okay, more stuff. I could pause and do some demos here and there, but I'm not sure how well we will be doing with time, so if there is time, I will do we can play with the terminal in the end. Let's talk about something else for now. So we got MetalLB doing the high level availability and failover setup for us. So what about DHCP? So DHCP and DNS are some sort of related if you want them to. The cool thing about relating them is that then when a host connects to a network and say, hey, I am, I don't know, TC1, whatever, then the DHCP server can remember that. And then when you ask the DHCP server if it also exposed DNS, okay, who is TC1? The DHCP server will remember and say, hey, TC1 is on this dynamically, this address from the DHCP pool, which I gave TC1. So that's kind of nice. And DNS mask, which we will be talking extensively about today, does this for you. And I thought, okay, why not? I need a DHCP server, and I already know DNS mask, so it also does DNS for me. Why not? There are some paper cuts. I'm not doing that good on time, so, well, doesn't matter. DNScript proxy is my third tool in this tool belt. I think it is very nice software. DNScript proxy is going to solve our privacy concerns, our conflicting relationship with our ISP. DNScript proxy presents itself as a DNS server, so you can ask DNS questions to it, port 53. Very normal. It can be in resolve conf. Nothing client specific is needed, unlike, for example, DOH, DNS over HTTPS. But on the other side of that port 53 facade is going to be a quite complex machinery that fetches a list of well-known resolvers that do use DNScript and will proxy your queries to them. And it is quite smart. It will try many of them, it will sort them by latency, and it will favor the ones that are like closer to you. So it is, in a way, self-balancing. This list of upstream resolvers is also self-refreshing. It's hosted in GitHub. It is signed with a known public key by the author, so it is quite nice. This is like a good strong contributor to DNS being fast, and definitely the key thing that makes it secure. It also does DNS over HTTPS, by the way, in this list. I'm actually not sure if that ends up in the real world being faster than DNScript. I have no idea, but I mean, for our purposes as a client, doesn't matter as long as it is encrypted. Okay. Final tool in our tool belt. When I mentioned in my wish list that I wanted this to be flexible and to connect to other servers, you know, I have a Kubernetes cluster, and in that Kubernetes cluster there are some services that I want to be able to reach from the outside, as it usually happens, right? Those services in that Kubernetes cluster have host names, and it will be quite nice for me to not have to replicate the host names that are on my Kubernetes cluster to a DNS server that is outside by hand, right? So there is this project which I co-authored called Stateless DNS, which is like a Helm chart. If you know Kubernetes, you know what this is. If you don't know, doesn't matter. It's like a package that bundles these two things together. External DNS is a tool that will connect to your Kubernetes cluster, look what host names your Kubernetes cluster is exposing, and then we'll register those somewhere else. This somewhere else is PowerDNS. So you can have, in this package, PowerDNS is included as a small, you know, sidecar, like it is in there, and it configures both things, so that external DNS looks at your Kubernetes cluster, say, okay, the host names that they need to expose are this, and this, registers them in PowerDNS, right? So then this PowerDNS inside your cluster automatically is able to resolve the host names that your cluster exposes to the outside, which is quite nice. And then we will tie this together. This is like the, if you want to look this up, this is the GitHub repo where this package, this Gantt chart exists. Don't ask about the name of the org. It's an inside joke that got out of hand. Cool. Recap. Pause. Where are we? So we have MetalLB. We talked about it in the beginning. It's going to make our whole thing highly available, not pictured here. We got external DNS, which is via stateless DNS, as we just talked. We got DNS script proxy, which is our upstream. And here there are many boxes because we're going to want to have like more than one of these. And we also have DNS mask DHCP, which is our DHCP server, and is also serving names for our local network, right? So now we should kind of, these are like three very independent name servers that don't know about each other. So we should kind of mash them together, right? How are we going to do this? With DNS mask, again, because, you know, it's so nice. I love DNS mask so much. So DNS mask, you probably know about this. It has been around for quite a while. I remember in my uni days, I would pride myself about knowing the man page of this thing by heart. It is no longer the case. I don't think it was ever the case, but nevertheless. This thing is like so nice. It is so flexible, it is so efficient, and it can do so many things. All of them reasonably well, which is rare. So how does this work? DNS mask will be configured to route our queries to the different name servers, right? we'll see how we do that in the next slide. It can also be fed deny list. That's how we're going to do our blocking of bad hosts. And again, it can load balance and it can cache the queries. So that's also will also contribute to our speed thingy. Okay, how does this look? The intimidating slide. Okay, so glossing over this. This part here, well, this is like don't propagate cluster names outside of the cluster. Cluster will be using DNS mask as well, so this should not go outside. These are local. This is our routing thing. And the car here is like the name of my local network. So everything that is like in the car TLD goes to the DHCP server. Everything that is in the terabox.moi domain, that's like the main domain that services in my cluster use. Those external services were managed with external DNS. Those go to 1014. This is like the stateless DNS server. Those are, by the way, MetalLB addresses. So these are like load balance. Who knows what this is? Pop quiz. Use application DNS.net. Show of hands. Who knows what this is? Nobody. One person, two, okay, three, four, okay, amazing. So this is like a canary domain that Mozilla made up to the best of my knowledge. If your network rejects this domain, then Firefox will not default to DNS over HTTPS. This is quite nice. Like if you have an over-engineered DNS network, you want your clients to use your over-engineered DNS network, right? It will be a pity to do this work for nothing. So if you black hole this domain, then Firefox will not default to DNS over HTTPS, which is quite nice. I don't know how I came across this thing, but I'm glad I did. Okay, this is like our DNS script proxy service, our upstream. We want DNS mask to use it. If it is not up, a couple reasons it may be not up, then I fall back to Quad9, and we do that in a strict order. This is another quite nice thing of DNS mask. DNS mask by default doesn't do retries on its own. It relies on clients. So you may have experienced this where you query the DNS server, it times out, and it takes like 5 seconds for the client to try again. That's awful. I don't want that. So I tell DNS mask, hey, be slightly unpolite and retry on your own. We are load balancing this across so many servers. So hopefully operators won't hate me for this. And then we now have some caching and whatnot, and then we include our bad blocks, our bad host list. Okay, so there is something missing in this config file. I'm not challenging. Well, before that, how do we do the ad blocking thing? So can DNS masks, is this built in into DNS mask? No, it is not, but it doesn't have to be because the best configuration language is Bash. So, yes, exactly. So it doesn't matter if DNS mask does not support this. We can coerce it to do it. So I have this tiny bash script here, like it's a four, five liner, that will fetch like this well-known, there are many of these things online, this is just one. And it will like, okay, write this to a file and then tell DNS mask to reload it, and then if you succeed it, wait for 8 hours, because there is probably no need to refresh that list more often than that. So there is that. I mean, it's cool to be able to do stuff like this. Okay, so in that config file, there was something missing. If you use Kubernetes a bit, you may know that you have a Kubernetes pod. How does a Kubernetes pod resolve names? Well, it has a resolve.conf file, right? Where is that resolve.conf file coming from? Well, it comes from the host, right? But we want the host to use a Kubernetes pod to resolve hosts, right? So if we do not tell DNS mask to not look at this file, DNS mask will try to recurse to itself, which is not very nice. And it will be a very different IP address, so DNS mask has no chance to notice this is happening. And fun things will happen. So in that config file, you have to use no resolve. So DNS mask doesn't load resolve.conf automatically. Fun stuff. Okay, so this is our full picture again. Where were we? We have Kubernetes pod that will use core DNS. We don't care about this. Core DNS will use DNS mask DNS. This is like our load balancing, caching, ad blocking thingy. Many pods, highly available thanks to MetaLLB. Our nodes will also use this. We prevent recursion of hell with this magic no resolve flag. We also have other devices outside of the network. Since this is provided by MetaLLB, this IP address is reachable from the world. Well, outside of Kubernetes, you may argue that's the world. And so other devices in there will also use this, and DNS mask is configured to route things to different places, right? So hopefully that will make sense, and you may have seen how we have fulfilled stuff in our wish list. Now there is one thing, another elephant in the room, so to speak, which is, you may wonder, isn't there like a problem here? If your Kubernetes cluster is using itself to resolve names, how do you pull the images, right? How do you download DNS mask if you depend on DNS mask to resolve, you know, docker.io or hopefully not, or gscr.io or whatever? Well, is this a problem? Yes. Does this set a bootstrap call? No, absolutely not. If I wipe everything and create the cluster from scratch, it will not bootstrap. It will not self-heal. Does it matter? I will say no. Like, you know, there is no perfect system. All systems, every very clever piece of infrastructure that you try to figure out will have some problems. I think that's hardly avoidable. This thing will not bootstrap, but this is like not a problem for me. I will say why later, but first, I've been running this setup in my network for, I think, 3, maybe 4 years. This situation where the cluster cannot start, it has happened to me once. As I was telling you, the number of times that a less over-engineer setup in Kubernetes has failed my network used to be once a month. So that's an improvement by my books. Why is not a problem often? Because nodes will cache container images, obviously. You should use, if you use image pull policy always, you should go to jail. This is bad. Don't do this ever. This is kind of a crime. Not the good kind, not the big A do crime kind, the bad kind. Don't do that. And redundancy and clever affinity also helps a lot. So I haven't shown lots of YAML in here. But the key important things, that is DNS mask and DNS script proxy, this like tolerate the control plane, and will at least one replica of this will be in the control plane. So that way, if the control plane is up, at least we have something. We are functional. And then everything else can start from there. And again, yeah, the all nodes will eventually, as pods move a bit around, all nodes or most nodes should have a local copy of these images. So that will be okay. In the event this is not the case, well, you get your hands on the keyboard, you go to the control plane, you edit resolve.conf, you put quad9 in there, and once everything stabilizes, you revert. It's not the end of the world. It takes 2 minutes, I promise. There is this thing I would like to try called Spiegel, that or Spiegel, I guess. It's not the German word. It's a Finnish word, or Swedish word actually, which is able to distribute container images across nodes in a cluster. This is quite nice. I don't use it because it doesn't support Cryo, but I think it will also help with this. Okay, so takeaways. What have I learned? What I think you should get out of this room within your head. DNS is very composable. It is, it should surprise nobody in this room, but it's a quite nice protocol, and you can make cool stuff. You can compose, you can delegate, you can segment, you can like divide and conquer your problem without doing complex stuff. I am scared of AXFR. You don't need AXFR for this. Just delegate names to places. Quite nice. Kubernetes is like a nice ecosystem. If you already know a bit about it, if you already have some exposure to it, I recommend playing with this cool stuff like highly available and failover. It's like really a game changer. Self-documented Git version infrastructure is like a treasure. Like when I was like 22 years old, everything I wrote on a keyboard lived forever in my head. This is no longer the case. Absolutely not. If I had made this thing and not write it down as YAML, 4 months after, I will remember nothing. So having everything as code in a Git repo is like really, really nice. And related to this, the space that your brain has is finite. If you are able to reuse knowledge, that's like a superpower. Reusing knowledge for me means putting stuff on Kubernetes, because it is what I already know. I recommend you figure how that pattern works for you. It may not be Kubernetes, it may be something else, but if you manage to optimize your brain to remember the stuff that you can reuse for other things, that's like a recipe for success, in my opinion. And this is all. Thank you so much.